you were listening earlier, let me take your mind back to this. And if you weren't, let me tell you about this story because it is extraordinary. You may have heard my interview with David Challen, the son of Sally Challen. Sally killed her husband, David's father, with a hammer in 2010. Tomorrow she'll find out whether her conviction for murder will be overturned when her case is reviewed by the Court of Appeal, whether it will be downgraded, diminished to manslaughter. Lawyers argue that the conviction should be reduced because she was driven to kill her husband, Richard, after years of psychological and coercive torment. I spoke to David at the start of the programme. A big reaction to that interview, and it really was very powerful indeed. He told me about his parents' relationship and why, extraordinarily, his mother still, from behind bars in jail, loves his father.
Vengeful, jealous, counting Viagra pills, you know, checking up on him. Of course she's going to check up on him. He'd been, you know, adulterous throughout the whole marriage, and many times he tried to convince her that she was making it up. She'd do her due diligence and print off the phone records and you know, show there's one number he's calling, it's a woman, and he would say, "You're mad, Sally, you're making it all up." And when she finally proved it, she sat down with me and she honestly said, "You know, I honestly thought I was maybe making it up. I was questioning it." I mean, it's calculated. She would found in his pocket two tickets to the London Eye, and he said, "Who did you go with?" And he said, "I didn't put them there, you put them there." I mean, that's scary. I say that to a lot of people and they just lose their minds. That's very scary, what you're doing to someone at that stage.
Your mum then is in prison for what? She was found guilty, she was in prison. How long was the original jail sentence?
22 years, brought down to 18 on appeal. She served 8 and has 10 remaining.
How is she today?
Emotional. We've been waiting about a year for this appeal to happen.
Which is happening tomorrow.
It's happening tomorrow. It's been pushed back twice. I mean, this is just, it's quite challenging. We're all highly emotional about it. We're just trying to get to that time. I mean, yeah.
Talk about the appeal in just a minute, but how has she coped in prison?
Oh, it's only gets worse for her. She says, you know, only gets worse. I think the only saving grace of it is, you know, her first year of remand in prison, she went on a freedom course and she learned about power and control and coercive control and these things of that nature. And she came out absolutely aghast. She was the textbook example. She couldn't believe it. Her whole life was an example. Imagine that you didn't know that. And she said these examples of things in relationships that she thought were normal to both me and my brother. And we were looking at her shocked, thinking that she thought that behaviour was normal. You know, a mother who was a shepherd throughout our whole lives, it suddenly turns into an infancy of understanding of what a relationship is like, because that's how isolated an individual is in coercive control. That's the severity that's just not recognised.
Has she been able to then experience a sort of rebirth, if you like, of identity in prison in any way, because she has now had the scales fall from her eyes a bit?
I think to an extent, yes, but still there's a dependency because she hasn't existed out in the wide world without our father, to know he's not around and that she can exist without him. You know, I don't believe she's had any independence in her life. You know, she was 15 when she was, I guess, captured by our father.
Because it must be very complicated for her how she feels about the loss of him, which ultimately was at her hands.
She still loves him. That's the power of coercive control.
She still loves him.
She still loves him because that's all she's ever known. That's all she's ever known.
I want to now talk to Rachel Horman, is a leading solicitor who specialises in domestic abuse. Rachel, could you give us the context of, if the appeal tomorrow goes in Sally Challen's favour, how significant will that be?
I think it will be really significant, not just obviously for Sally, and I very much hope that it does go in her favour, but for lots of other victims out there, both in terms of perhaps other women who are in prison in similar circumstances to Sally, but also much more widely than that. I think there will be then more of a recognition of the impact of coercive control and what that can do to victims also what coercive control is. I still think it's very misunderstood. Not everybody knows what coercive control is. So there'll be much more publicity about that. I would hope that it will lead to more women coming forward to complain about it, because I know there are lots of women who are experiencing this, who don't know it's a crime, don't think the police can do anything to help them. And I hope it will lead to more prosecutions in relation to coercive control, because unfortunately, whilst we have had this law since late 2015, it's still underutilised.
So in terms of how tomorrow will go, I mean, are you confident in any way? I know it's difficult to prejudge these things because it is new.
Yes, I'm as confident as I can be. Obviously, I'm not privy to all the details that Sally's solicitors are compiling. But I think there is now a growing recognition, and obviously we do have this criminal offence now, which we didn't do when Sally was initially convicted. Had Sally experienced incidents of physical violence, then I think the situation would be very different, because she had experienced this domestic terrorism or coercive control. That wasn't recognised and wasn't a criminal offence at the time. So I would hope that the situation is very different now and there will be a successful outcome for Sally.
Can you give us some examples of, if this appeal is successful, other cases that may come to light of women who are in prison for murder who could perhaps also see their crime reduced to manslaughter?
Well, I can't discuss anybody's case specifically. That obviously wouldn't be right, but I'm aware that there are a number of women who are in prison at the moment who will be looking at this case. And if there is a success, then I think we will see other cases like Sally's with appeals coming forward. But like I say, I think there is a much wider benefit as well from this in terms of the recognition of coercive control and the impact that that has on women, that it can lead women to do things like this and the awful psychological damage that it does. And I think that still isn't recognised by society. We still think of domestic abuse as being a black eye, and it really isn't. This is much more damaging to victims and actually is much more dangerous. It's seven times more of a reliable predictor of homicide than physical violence is, yet the focus is constantly on has he hit you, not digging down deeper and looking at this much more sinister, much more damaging behaviour of coercive control.
Can you give some examples of coercive control, like behaviours by partners that would have been legal before 2015 that now aren't?
One that I, a case that I dealt with personally, I had a client that had been forced to eat all of her meals from a dog bowl on the floor. She went to the police to report that because obviously it was extremely humiliating and psychologically damaging for her. She reported it to the police and she was told, come back when he hits you. That was pre-December 2015. And to be fair to the police, there wasn't a great deal else they could have done. So she was turned away, and I think most people would accept that that behaviour is horrendous. So things like that, humiliation. I have clients that are told when they're allowed to go to the toilet, and if their partner doesn't say they can go, then they have to just wet themselves. They're just simply not allowed to go to the toilet. Again, that wouldn't have been a criminal offence before this law came in. Partners going through somebody's phone, reading all the text messages and making them fear the consequences of that, placing a tracker on somebody's car so that they know where you are all the time, timing you when you go to the shops so that the victim is under pressure that whole time, can't stop to speak to anybody, has to be back. And again, there are consequences for victims who break these rules, and that's the really scary thing. Checking somebody's receipts to see exactly what they've spent money on, not allowing them access to bank accounts or bank cards.
It's a horrific picture that you are painting there, and you know, for people who can say they really don't know what that phrase means, coercive control, thank you for doing that, if I can put it like that. We will see how tomorrow goes, and thank you for your time in advance of that. Rachel Horman, a leading solicitor who specialises in domestic and coercive, all forms of domestic abuse, which of course includes, as we're just hearing, coercive control.